X5, number 3B.
Then we come to the counterfeit of truth, which is error, and error is considered as the form in which mortal mind appears. The counterfeit of truth is error. Truth is the divine form, the divine gestalt, the divine form, the stature of the manhood of Christ, the compound idea, and so the counterfeit of it is, therefore, the mortal consciousness, the erroneous consciousness. Well, what is erroneous consciousness? It's actually nothing else again except that mortal mind is believing in its own beliefs. Then we are conscious of beliefs, and that's mortal consciousness. It's the way how the whole gamut of mortal mind in its evolution appears as being completely erroneous. We see it now as erroneous because it has no factuality within itself. And as we see that it has no factuality in itself, we come to the last counterfeit of love, namely that we see how empty that whole thing is, how empty the whole build-up of mortal mind is, that there is nothing really in it which is substantial, which is true, which is factual, just nothing. Just nothing. And that's how a story of mortal mind ends. It resolves itself. That's how many chapters in the textbook are built up, showing, when Mrs. Eddy shows the negative side of the seventh synonymous term, she builds up that way, like the first part of physiology, she just builds up that subject in this way. Until at the end of the first part in physiology, that whole thing just blows up and nothing is left. It's like grass, she quotes, and the wind goes over it, and its place was no more known. Just no more there. It's the erroneous consciousness resolves itself at that point of love. Yes. So can you see that in dealing with any question of evil, we have to be careful that we just don't stop there where we say, well, death is a counterfeit of life. So if there is a belief in death, I take life and I treat this with life because that's the fact about the counterfeit death, and I stay in life. Well, that's a good beginning, certainly. But what is death? Death is an argument that mortal mind is in body. Therefore, I would go further than just try to deal it with life and stay on the ideas of life. I would see also the fact about mind and spirit and soul. I would see why there was never life in matter. As long as I believe that there was life in matter, that life ever entered matter, I've already started wrong. But if I see that life is mind, the divine mind, that which mind knows, and that mind was always spirit and never in matter, was always spirit and therefore spiritual, therefore never identified in soul in a body, was therefore never born into a body, therefore could never be resurrected out of the body, it never died into the body and never needs to be resurrected out of the body, then I have found my true principle. Then mind, spirit, soul is then my true principle on which I build. And if I build on that, then I see that principle was always operating, and that is life. And therefore nothing can stop the operation of the divine principle, nothing can stop life. But that life I see not as having been once in a body and now trying to live on without the body. If I reason that way, I have lost my battle. I must see that life never was in body, therefore never has to be resurrected out of body, which means I always get the best sense of life when I try to find where was I as life identity before I was born into the belief that I have been born. Where have I been before birth? And not so much how can I overcome death. If I feel I can clearly see that I am before Abraham was, and I can really see that I'm life of principle, and not the life that had a beginning and an ending, then I begin to overcome death. So one can understand sometimes why Mrs. Eddy said that we are now up to the last enemy, namely to overcome birth. People are most interested in overcoming death. They can't. They can't. If they have believed that they are living in matter, they can't overcome death. They are first to overcome the belief that they were ever living in the body. And there naturally, you see, you have to be careful. If then you say to yourself, my word, then where have I been? Where have I been before birth? I have no recollection of that. See, only perhaps some spiritualistic, mediumistic-minded people may have some kind of recollection where they have been before earth. They have a feeling they have been living in Tibet or have been living in Africa or somewhere there, and have some kind of mediumistic sense of it. But the others don't, thank God. See? But where have we been? Before birth? Seems that nobody's interested in that. Everybody's interested. Here I am, and I have a life in my body, and how can I have now immortal life? And so we lose our basis. We lose the wideness of our vision. And therefore we should not be surprised that we have difficulty in overcoming the belief in death. But if we start where the root error is, with birth, and see that life was never born, and I begin to see that therefore I have never been a mortal man, therefore I don't have to have a recollection where I have been as a mortal man before birth. Have I been in Africa, or have I been in on the North Pole, or where? Have I been an elephant before birth and transmuted into a man, or what? Huh? If we have no material conception of life, then we find our life eternal. And we feel we have found our true life. And we feel, start there. There is our course. There we have to tackle the question. Not at the end, at the beginning. All that happened in the human sense was that evolution of mortal mind, of not starting with the divine mind as the cause and source of our true identity. But that's something to think of. And little by little one gets into the feel of the reality of the one life, and that one life has nothing to do with people, with landscapes, meeting again, mother and father and daughter and son and I don't know what, and friends and so on. This is all still on the level of human beliefs, of mediumistic beliefs, where we feel, I hope after this, if I believe in eternal life, I will meet this person and perhaps that wonderful landscape and that wonderful landscape. This is all looking out again to a new death, to be, after death, born again into matter, into human material beliefs. And we start all over again in the wrong way. We should see that if we come out of this belief in mortal life, that we go into a realm that is of the realm of mind and no more of mortal mind. a realm of spirit, no more a realm of matter, with landscapes and gardens, beautiful flowers and beautiful trees and mountains and lakes, and I don't know what one figures out what should be paradise, you know, and how there are people coming along and helping us and saluting us and saying, come on, I'm glad you come too, huh? We are waiting for you. This all may happen, but still, again, on a human level. It's still not spirit. It's again longing to be in matter. It's not the desire to come out of matter into the realm of spirit. Therefore, try to see that sense of life that is mind and not human mind's picture and image, that it is the image of the divine mind that only knows the realm of ideas. And I guess the sooner we begin with that, the better we will make the grade. All right, that's the story of mortal mind. Don't you feel it's a beautiful story? It doesn't disturb me at all, and on the contrary, I feel that whole gamut of error is nothing else than just one big firework of something that is, and it's over. It's all mortal mind blowing up, and then it's all over. Yes. All right. We come to the next point, 14. Perhaps we can call it methods of handling evil. Methods of handling evil. Investigating what Mrs. Eddy in her book gives as methods of evil, I think if one analyzes her answer, one sees that she gives answers on various different levels with various different rules. One method which she repeats over and over again is handle evil at once. This is a big rule, handle evil at once. Don't wait. And actually everyone knows that the moment only the suggestion of evil, only the first little symptoms of evil arises, if one is awake and handles it right then, that it is much easier to handle it than if one lets it grow and grow and grow until one feels it has become a big thing and starts handling it then. So she says, you must control evil thoughts in the first instance, or they will control you in the second. This is a very simple, blunt statement, very clear, which says, if we don't handle evil right away, evil begins to handle us. It says, choke these errors in their early stages, don't wait until they become too big. Arrest these wrong thoughts before they have a chance to manifest itself. Can you hear? It's always the same. Arrest it before they can grow. Decide quickly as to the proper treatment of error. Decide quickly. We have the human mind has the tendency to say, oh well, it's only a little bit of error. Well, I wait until it and see how what happens, if it grows bigger, if it becomes stronger. I wait until finally one feels one is put into the defensive, one is cornered by the belief, and one feels one is hardly any more able to handle it. He says, treat disease with sudden dismissal. With sudden dismissal. That mortal mind must be opposed promptly and persistently. That Jesus said, agree with thine adversary quickly, whilst thou art in the way with him. So you see, both the Bible and Mrs. Eddy present us that rule to handle evil at once, and to handle it even then or then already when it doesn't seem to be very important, very big. Then, investigating the textbook further, one finds another way of treatment, which she calls argumentation. This method of argumentation doesn't take up much room in her science. Actually, one can hardly find a couple of good references on argumentation. There are quite few. They are very clear and distinct. And thinking that one has even some pain to find the method and the method of argumentation, and then see that most Christian Science practitioners argue, and one is wondering, where do they get that, and what do they make with the rest of the textbook? She has presented the science, and to heal through science, and not through arguments. For her, she says, the arguments are only auxiliaries to aid bringing thought into accord with the spirit of truth and love. Here she says it very bluntly, argumentation is a method as an auxiliary method. It has only one purpose, really, so to say, to show us the way, to lead us the way, to help us to become acquainted with the spirit of truth and love. So she compares, really, the lower method of arguments with the higher method of the spirit of truth and love, the spirit of science. She says that we only need arguments when the student is not perfectly attuned with divine science. Then he can use the method of arguments in order to get attuned with divine science. Therefore, she asks both argument and science, she says, by the truthful argument you employ, and especially, now she puts the accent, the weight, especially by the spirit of truth and love which you entertain, you will heal the sick. Yes. All right, then she gives various indication about how to argue and so on. We'll come back to that. But here it is that we must see that kind of treatment that always builds an argument, you know, or on the scientific statement of being is usually also taken as an argument. There is no life, truth, substance, intelligence in matter. You just stated all is infinite mind is a kind of argumentation and is only an auxiliary until we have the spirit of truth and love. Why on earth then does she give that immature method of argumentation? Because, first of all, as she says, it may lead the student to the spirit of truth. But also because she knew that there are always circumstances where even those who have the spirit of truth and love, the spirit of divine science, that they may come into a situation where they need argumentation. What is divine science? That wonderful consciousness that just dwells in the realm of the oneness of being is naturally a spiritual consciousness of peace and rest and harmony without any battle going on. But say, if you have terrific pains, perhaps through an accident, perhaps through this or that, suddenly are overwhelmed with terrific pains, you may not find that peace of divine science to give yourself a treatment. It hurts so much all over the place that the auxiliary we can use is therefore argumentation, because that's then the nearest to the good, to defend ourselves against believing that it really does hurt, that it really hurts so much that it can kill us and that it can wipe us out. So in such a position, I think each one would begin to argue. And that's better than to let go. But it is only there until we can take up the work again in the spirit of truth and love. What is this kind of argumentation? When one asks, how does she explain really the way of arguing, then you have all these verbs she uses which indicate a very strong, powerful thought acknowledgement, like assure yourself, assure your patient, reassure yourself, calm your thought, convince yourself, banish all evil thoughts, all wrong thoughts, deny matter, deny pain, deny that you can be pained. Can you see these terms that are very powerful, but which all have to do with the activity of the human mind? That's what argumentation does. Dismiss error, declare the truth, exclude the error, insist upon the truth, negate that you are sick, protest against pain, repudiate error, and so on. Can you hear? There are these active human faculties that take a definite stand for truth. But it's still what goes on in the human mind. It is not the spirit of truth and love. Truth is the divine truth, the divine mind, and so it is something completely different than a scientific treatment. Then there is another treatment which Mrs. Eddy uses quite often, and I come back, I already indicated it earlier this day, the method of reversal. And that method of reversal must be seen in its proper light. As I've said, the method of reversal is used very often. That reversal of exchanging the objects of sense for the ideas of soul, all that is naturally not what Mrs. Eddy understands under reversal. And therefore, I will just show you one or the other quotation where you can see that we must put the method of reversal into its proper light. Say, if we take a statement from the textbook, as many practitioners would do, and read, thought is borrowed from a higher source than matter, and by reversal, error serves as waymarks to the one mind in which all error disappears in celestial truth. So, this is a statement. What does it say? That thought is borrowed from a higher source than matter, and by reversal, error, serves as waymarks to the one mind. So from that passage they take, all right, error serves as a waymark, I only have to reverse the error. And Mrs. Eddy says so, black on white. But what do? They take a case and name it as error and give it a certain name, say this is a broken leg, or this is frustration, or this is this or that. They name it as what it is. So you go out from a human belief. You go out from really a false concept of what the error is. And by reversal and exchanging it and putting instead of an error that they have seen, an idea, they believe that this is what Mrs. Eddy means by reversal. But it isn't. It isn't at all. But perhaps you know how, from your own experience or the experience with your friends and so on, this is a method that is used over and over and over and over. Now, this sentence does appear in a different connotation, because the sentence before this reads like this: when examined in the light of divine science, you see, you go out from divine science, mortals present more than is detected upon the surface, since inverted thoughts and erroneous beliefs must be counterfeits of truth. And then she goes on with the second sentence. In other words, you see here very distinctly that her method of science is to start here with divine science, examine in the light of divine science, that's where you go out. There you see, when examined in the light science, that mortals must present something much more than just mortals. Since inverted thoughts and erroneous beliefs must be counterfeits of truth. Can you see that you go out from truth and see that which is inverted? When truth is inverted, you have an erroneous state of mortality. Then you come to the right analysis. Then you come to the divine mind reading. You go out from divine science, you go out from truth, and you know that if that truth is inverted, then you have a mortal, and therefore comes the second sentence, therefore by reversing that inverted process, you arrive again at the true idea. Reversal means that one reverses that wrong process that has gone before, or it isn't a reversal. Is that clear? That therefore practice is not going out from an erroneous situation, say, now I reverse that. We must reverse the inverted deduction. That error came into being, so to say, because we were not deducing rightly from the divine principle, from truth. And that has to be reversed. All right.